The desire to create is one of the deepest yearnings of the human soul. We each have an inherent wish to create something that did not exist before. The more you trust and rely upon the Spirit, the greater your capacity to create.
I'm Nancy Hansen, and this is Everything Creative. This program explores a wide range of creative ideas, talents, and experiences through interviews and group discussions. Welcome to Everything Creative. I'm Nancy Hansen. Excited about today's episode. It's kind of a special edition. I'm here with Eldon Cannon, who is Group Manager of Ground Services here on Temple Square. Eldon, thanks so much for being here with us today.
Oh, I'm glad to be here, Nancy. Glad to help answer any questions we can and help people feel comfortable about Temple Square and Christmas.
Great. Well, this is such an exciting time of year, being Christmas and the beautiful lights that draw so many people to come here. And I want to talk about that and kind of the logistics of it and why we do this. But first of all, let's talk about you and how did you end up here in this job? Tell me about your history.
Well, I've always been an individual that's been interested in the outdoors and in gardening. And it started, I think, with my dad. He was a ranger down at Cedar Breaks. And I just thoroughly enjoyed the wildflowers. And I think that it was the love of gardening that he instilled in me in a garden that we had in our backyard at home that started me in gardening in the outdoors. And then Christmas, with Christmas tree sales, I was in the nursery business for about 27 years before doing other things. And so I designed, I landscaped, I worked with Christmas lights in that industry. And that was the beginning of how I ended up here on Temple Square. And there's more to it than that. Having been in the industry for 27 years, thoroughly loving all of the plant materials that we dealt with in the gardens, Christmas was a natural step up because we wanted to fill the time at the nursery during the Christmas season with something because there's nobody coming into the shops
right
at that time of the year. And so Christmas trees, Christmas lights became a part of it. And I worked at BYU in their greenhouses and in their floral department. And at one point, Peter Lassig, who had been here on Temple Square for 47 years prior to my coming, is the one that probably really got things going with the Christmas lights and the history and the tradition here on Temple Square. And for me to step in about 7 years ago and take over from Peter and his crew that were here were pretty big shoes to fill.
Yeah. So tell us how did this whole decorating Temple Square thing start way back when?
Way back when. Well, obviously I wasn't here, but my understanding of the story and how it began was that President David O. McKay's wife came to him one day, 1 year, and said, President, we've got a real love of Christ, and we ought to do something on Temple Square for the birth and the celebration of Christ's birthday. And we ought to show and demonstrate it in some way. And she planted the idea of why not some Christmas decorations on Temple Square. And I understand that from that first small beginning where there were just a few Christmas lights on Temple Square proper, that the history began. One of the things that I remember is the movie that was made on Temple Square that illustrated some of the lights and the decorations of those early days. Can't even remember the name of the individual who starred in that one. I have to think about that and come back with it. But that was something that was very much publicized and showed the decorations on Temple Square. And that began the process of people coming and visiting and seeing nativity scenes and seeing the trees lit with Christmas lights and the choir music with a narration in the nativity scene. And it has just grown from those simple beginnings. I believe it was in the 60s with the McKays, till it became what it is today.
And does it change every year? Is there, I know every year that I've come, there are certain things that are always the same. The nativity, are there new things that people can notice every year? Are the There are so many questions. Are the light? is this one tree always red? I mean, how do you plan and design that?
Well, obviously, from the first beginnings, things have changed continually. And recently, things have been more the same because we get to a certain size and we feel that the growth is big enough to do what we need to do. One large tree, which is called the Cedar of Lebanon, is a very popular tree. And we light it every other year because of some damage that we do to each of the trees that we light. When we get up in the trees with a lift, as an example, we break off some of the very small twigs. That's hard on the trees.
Yeah.
And in the past, we've also had incandescent lights. And incandescent lights heat up the atmosphere right around the light bulb. And because we're putting so many of those light strands on the trees, we artificially create an environment right around the branch that's much warmer than you would expect. And if we have a night like we have the last few nights here on Temple Square where it gets down to the teens or below, those Christmas lights will come on about 5:30 at night. They will shut down between 10 and 10:30. And for those few hours, it's very, very warm right around each of the buds that are going to give growth to the new growth on those trees next year. And when we then shut that electricity down, it shuts off that power, it shuts off the heat, and we go from a freeze-thaw cycle. So we try and let those branches and the little buds on each branch rest every other year on some of our bigger, more valuable trees.
I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, it's one of those things that kind of slips by a lot of people.
Yeah. So what about the switch to like an LED light?
The incandescent lights, which have been around for a long time, everybody's had the frustration, I think, of being a home individual lighting their Christmas tree. Mm-hmm. They plug the strand in for the first time after not having them up for the year. And the strand of lights doesn't work. And that is so frustrating.
Right.
And we have techniques that we have developed over the years, a couple of devices that we plug in and help those incandescent light bulbs be found by our crews. But it's a very time-consuming process. What we have found is that the new technology, the LED lights, don't have that problem. And so we can wrap the trees, and if a light goes out, and an incandescent, you lose the whole strand.
Right.
And we don't notice that with the LEDs quite like we do with the incandescent. So that's one reason that we're going to the LEDs. It may be helpful, Nancy, for people to understand that the LED is a light-emitting diode. For some of the geeks out there, that might mean something, but for most of us, it's just a new technology.
Just LED. Yeah.
We're also finding that with the LEDs, there is much less energy usage, and so we can put the number of strands. Each time a tree grows, you have to put additional lights on a tree. And when you increase the number of strands on a tree, you're increasing the amount of electrical usage, and you'll reach a point where the circuit that is being run from can't handle any more capacity. And so with the LEDs, we find that we can add more lights without having more energy usage, and in fact, we're using much less energy because of those.
Right.
We have had some interesting dilemmas with the LEDs. The lights are not colored the same.
Yeah, I wondered about that because you do see with LED lights, it's just a little bit different look to them.
That's right. What you find with the incandescent is that the light is covered with glass. That's what the light is made out of. Mm-hmm. And then the glass is painted with plastic or other paints. And that outer coating will eventually wear off and it will shine through with a different color, usually white. And so you get a combination of pink and white showing through on an incandescent. On an LED, it is not the covering that gives the color to the light. It is the chemical that is inside the technological part of the device that glows and gives off that particular color. So we've struggled a little bit to find just the exact pink that we want or just the exact red or white. And the industry is relatively new.
Yeah.
And if people will look at the blues that are LED lights, those really shine brightly. And it's a new color that you haven't seen in incandescent lights because of the technology involved.
So do you mix the two?
Incandescents and LEDs?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We do in some cases. But the majority, we're just getting started with the LED changeover here at Temple Square. And so the majority of things that you will see out there are still incandescent.
Mm-hmm.
And gradually, as budgets will allow, we will go more and more to those LEDs.
Can you tell the difference in the look of them, though, when you're...
You can. One of the things that happens with an LED light is that it shines directly out the tip of the light itself very, very brightly. And if you ever had a car that comes at you with LED headlights, as an example, it almost blinds you. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the side of an LED light, you can see it, but it's much more dim. And so the effect is, as you walk by a tree that has been decorated with LED lights, you see the light from the side, then you see it head on where it's really bright, and then you see it from the side again. So it's almost a blinking look as you walk past the trees without the lights actually blinking.
Yeah.
So the color differences and also that kind of blinking.
Yeah. Effect. Interesting. Well, I'm talking today on Everything Creative with Eldon Cannon, who is the manager of the grounds here on Temple Square. Let's kind of define what we mean when we talk about Temple Square.
Oh, that's a good point. Most people think of Temple Square as the block here in Salt Lake City where the temple sits.
Right.
And as a result, to most people, that's Temple Square. To other individuals, Temple Square is the headquarters of the church, which includes up to 4, 5, or 6 blocks, depending on which buildings they count as being part of the church headquarters. And so Temple Square, by definition, is where the temple sits. But over the years, as the church downtown footprint has grown, we have included the church office building block, the conference center block, and the family history library block as all of Temple Square. And as visitors come to Temple Square, they can see new types of designed Christmas displays in each of those blocks. As an example, over on the block where the church or the family history library sits, they have an older cabin in the style of the pioneers that came into the valley. And we have tried to put hanging lanterns that are somewhat reminiscent of what you might find in older days outside the cabin. Up on the COB block, we have used that tradition of Christmas lighting, which comes from Spain and Mexico, which are luminaria. Basically, it resembles a paper sack, and the luminarias were originally designed with a paper sack, some with cutouts, and some just with candles set in the bottom of them. And you light walkways, stairways, things of that nature with those luminaria. And so those are some of the differences that people will see as they come onto the different blocks that we refer to as Temple Square.
Okay.
But that is actually church property in downtown.
So the grounds, that's considered the same thing.
Right.
Now, who does the design for those things? Is that you? Do you have a team?
I give credit to the team that came before me mostly because they are the ones that developed the tradition, developed much of what you see, including the nativity scenes, which we have a number of nativity scenes. We'll talk about those in a minute. Peter Lassig and his crew were the creative genius, at least they're the ones I give credit for all of the development of those things which are used here on Temple Square.
What kind of new things have you come up with since you've been here?
You know, I don't know that's a fair question, but let me give it a little bit of a try. This last year, we had President Hinckley as the voice of the narration of the nativity scene here on Temple Square, which was appropriate. At his passing, we raised the red flag saying, we think that it's time that we have a new recording that would be recorded by President Monson, our new prophet. And so we have people in-house that took that idea, ran with the concept, got the Tabernacle Choir involved, and through a new recording of the Nativity and the recording of President Monson with a new Christmas message at the end of that Nativity scene for Temple Square. That was one thing that a lot of people went to work on and updated it, and that's something that's new.
Yeah.
One of the other things that is a little bit different, there is one of the older original nativity scenes that when it was first put together and developed, it had a mannequin-like feature and the clothing of the individuals looked like regular natural clothing. And when it came time to find a new one to replace that, it was in nice enough shape as far as the framework that Peter and his crew didn't want to throw it away. But they refurbished it. And what they did is they coated it with an acrylic paint that was white. And it became the nativity that got moved from its original position on Temple Square proper. And we now use it on the COB block and Main Street. For years, it had been placed in a location on lawn on either side of the reflecting pool on Main Street. And 2 years ago, we were given permission to put Christ as the center point, Joseph and Mary, in the reflecting pool on Main Street. And if you stand to the east and look across the reflecting pool, you have Christ, Mary, Joseph with the temple in the background. And I like it because to me, it is putting the center of Christmas where it belongs, and that's the focus of Christ with the temple in the background. And for LDS people, that's what we want to emphasize, is that the holiday is for remembering the birth of Christ, and we encourage people to come and feel that spirit and encourage people also to remember the importance of the temple in the lives of the LDS individual and wanting to get back to our Father in heaven.
Yeah. Do you have any idea how many visitors come? Is there any way to track that at all?
I don't know. I know that they estimate that there are over 5 million, 5.5 million that come year-round.
Wow.
But how many actually come for the Christmas season, mm-hmm. I don't know. But when you're out here, the Friday after Thanksgiving is when we turn those lights on every year. There's quite a crowd out there.
No, I've never been here for that. How does that work?
When they first decided that they were going to light Temple Square, there was an activity that was planned in the tabernacle. The tabernacle at the time held between 4,000 and 5,000 people. And they would have those who were in the tabernacle, and they were enjoying the music of the season from the choir. And yet, Temple Square around the tabernacle was filling with people. And I understand that at one point it got to the point that when it was time for those individuals to come out of the tabernacle and light the square, that the square was so full of people that the people didn't have space to get out of the tabernacle.
Wow.
And see the lights come on. And so a few years ago, that ceremony of lighting Temple Square was done away with. And so what we do now for the lighting is we indicate that at dusk on Friday following Thanksgiving, the lights will come on gradually. Usually the news media is here, the television, and there's an awful lot of excitement. People just get excited about the Christmas season and the lighting of Temple Square and the other areas downtown. So it's much more quiet, but everybody still gets excited about coming and seeing them for the first night.
Sure. And is there just this enormous switch that you, Eldon, get to flip that turns on the lights all over the square?
You know, in a romantic setting, that might be the way it is done. And occasionally they do have a ceremony where they show and indicate a switch that will turn on a few of the lights. But almost like any of the technology nowadays, it's lit by computer switch.
Sure.
And so we have technicians who do the programming of those computers weeks in advance so that they make sure that we've got all of the exceptions as to when the lights are going to turn on and off. Generally speaking, the lights will turn on about 5:30 each evening. And between 10 and 10:30, all of the lights will be gone on Temple Square. So that'll help the listeners understand when they can come.
Yeah.
Lights will remain on through the holiday season, and the last evening that they will be on will be New Year's Eve. And so we invite people to come down to Temple Square and bring their families, visit, have an opportunity to understand what the Christmas story is all about and what it means to us, and then just enjoy the opportunity to be downtown as a family together.
Yeah, I like that they're on that long, because a lot of us try to make it before Christmas, but that doesn't always work out. And it's nice when you can kind of relax a little bit and come down. And it's absolutely so beautiful and something that everyone that lives here in the Valley wants to see. Have you found that a lot of visitors come and make that part of what they do, is they want to come and see those lights in person?
Oh, you bet. And, having been raised here in Utah myself, that was a historical trip for our family to come from Utah Valley to come to Temple Square and see the lights and see the changes from year to year and just really enjoy the opportunity of understanding what Christmas was really all about. So yeah. You bet. There are people that come from all over the world. If they're here and they're going skiing, they'll come down to Temple Square because that's one of the things that people talk about. Have you seen the lights on Temple mm-hmm. Square? You've got to go see those. And one of the things that we do that I think makes our display a little bit more different than some of the other displays you will see is that when we wrap the lights on a tree, we try and wrap individual branches. By doing so, as you stand back and look at a lit tree, it has the shape of a living tree.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at alternative ways of lighting the trees that other entities do, some will use a net and they drape it over the tree, or those that you'll see at some community development centers, you will see that they wrap each large tree just with circular mm-hmm. strands of lights. And so you see those circles going up the outside of the tree. But because my background is in horticulture and botany, I like the look of the natural tree. Peter and his crew was doing that before I ever arrived on the scene, but I really like that technique. It does take more time,
sure,
more energy to make that happen. But I think because of that, people see the style of lighting that we do and appreciate that.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. We're talking today on Everything Creative with Eldon Cannon, who is the manager of the grounds on Temple Square, talking about lighting the trees. And he's going to give us some tips. I don't know, can you, share with us? I mean, I've tried that, and I don't know how you go up the branch and turn around and come back. How does that work? What are your secrets?
Well, I don't know. There are an awful lot of secrets, Nancy, but there are some things that might be helpful to understand. You do indeed start by putting a power cable to the tree. And you need to know approximately how many strands you're going to use, what the wattage is, and people are going to be out there thinking in their minds, how do I compute all that? Typically, a home breaker is going to hold about 20 amps worth of electrical power. And what you have to determine is how many strands you want to use in that tree and make sure that you've got enough cabling going over to that tree to handle the lights you're going to use.
I can promise you most people don't think about that, don't you think?
They do. The problem with their not thinking of it is that it's very easy to put too many lights mm-hmm. on the tree and you'll overload a circuit and you'll blow those circuits.
Right.
Or in some cases, the lights, if they're incandescent, they have a small fuse in the plug end, the male plug end, and it's very easy to overload the circuits and blow all those fuses. And then you can't get that strand of light again. And if you've wrapped the tree, then you're in trouble because you got to unwrap it all. One thing that does help people understand that you think in terms of going around the branch to wrap this, and I wish we had a camera so people could see this, but instead of going around the branch, if you weave back and forth on top of the branch, going underneath a branch, a side branch, it's much easier to take that off than come back and re-unwrap every time you're having to take lights off the tree. Maybe there's something else they could understand. We on Temple Square have, well, I wouldn't call them artificial trees because they're not. They're real trees. But we have an agreement with the state lands office where we will go and harvest firs and aspens. And we bring them to Temple Square. And we find places that don't look like they're quite full enough that we would like additional Christmas trees there.
Hmm.
And we put fence posts in the ground, wrap wire around the fence post and around the tree, and then we put lights on all of those trees. And we sometimes use our older lights, and so all we have to do when it's time to take the display down and we're going to throw that set of lights away, we unwrap the wire from the stake holding the tree up, and we can dispose of the whole thing. So I don't know that most homeowners have that luxury, but
yeah.
That's a way we make sure we circuit through our light system.
Interesting. Something to notice when you come, you know, look for those trees.
Look for those that are standing in artificially.
Do you light your own trees at home?
I light my house. My sweetheart wife is the one who does our interior tree at home.
Does she?
Yeah, she does. Bless her heart.
And you don't do the trees in your yard?
No, I don't. We moved in. We're in a relatively new home. And as a result, we're still in the process of designing and having some of the trees grow. And
throw some netting over your bushes.
Yeah.
Call it good, right? When do you have to start this process? How early in the year?
In order for us to accomplish everything before the Friday after Thanksgiving, we start cabling the trees, which means putting their electrical power cords into the trees the 1st of August.
Wow.
And the first thing that we do is we cable some of our large trees on Temple Square. Those require either a lift, an artificial lift that a person can ride up into those trees, or we also have arborists, which are individuals that work for me that know how to safely climb those trees and take those cables into the trees.
Really?
Yeah. So that begins in August, and it's interesting. You see these guys in hard hats with rigging gear and ropes, and they're hanging in those trees. What they're doing is they will do some pruning that way as well, but they are in August starting the process of putting those cables, the electrical cables, in the trees. And then following those electrical cables going into the trees, we begin the wrapping process. And that goes through that Friday after Thanksgiving, and following the display of Christmas, we begin taking Christmas lights down. This year it'll be January, first part of January. And we'll have everything down, inventoried, wrapped up, and put away by the end of March. So it takes quite a while to make it all happen.
Wow. So there's just 5 months that it's in storage and you're ready to go again. Where are all of the lights and equipment stored?
We have them at various buildings. We have some here on Temple Square. We have some other warehouses that we store some of those boxes of Christmas lights in that are off of Temple Square. And it does take a little storage space to hold them all.
Oh, I'm certain. And so is there a paid crew or are there volunteers? Because I know you use volunteers in the spring for planting and things like that.
We do. We have paid individuals as well as volunteers. The volunteers, many of them come and will participate in wrapping shrubs or hedges, as an example, where we have created our own nets for the hedges. And they will come and lay those on and tie them to the shrubs and make them look as natural as they can. And that is one way that we use many of our volunteers for Christmas lighting. We also use some of them when it comes time to put them away. We don't just throw them in a box somewhere.
Let's hope not.
Because you'd have a real rat's nest trying to undo all of that wire. And so each individual strand is taken off the tree, checked before we put it away, make sure that it's functioning, that it's working, that the lights are doing what they need to do, that the fusers are all okay. And then each individual strand is wrapped in a bundle and individually put into a storage container. We know that we've got 50 strands of lights in most containers and then label those storage boxes. And then those storage boxes head down to the area where we store them in the warehouse until it's time to start the process again the next year.
What if someone wanted to volunteer to help with that?
We have a young lady right now, Kathy Mills, is that individual. And what we do is we have individuals call the church headquarters, the switchboard, and they sign up usually a year or in some cases even more in advance. And Kathy Mills is our volunteer coordinator that they would go through to ask, can they join that volunteer crew? And you know, Nancy, if it wasn't for those volunteers, we wouldn't be able to do the gardening that we do because we use volunteers for gardening. And we wouldn't be able to accomplish what we do with our Christmas display. So we really appreciate those volunteers.
Yeah, I'm sure. So are they the same? Is it the same, the group of volunteers that would do Christmas? You just volunteer and get what you get? Or are you specifically, I'd like to help with Christmas? Or I'd like to help with gardening?
Typically what will happen is that the individuals that are volunteering will say what they are interested in doing. And Kathy will sign them up for Christmas if they want to do Christmas or if they want to come and do pull out and planting in the spring or the fall. Whoever wants to volunteer, we'll let them know it's available. and they will dictate where they will want to be most useful. And so it's a coordinated effort between our volunteer coordinator and those that want to volunteer.
And how big of a crew do you have? How many people paid that need to support you to work on this huge project?
Now, that is a good question. We have a floral group, which we haven't talked about. Our floral group does all of our indoor decorating, and they have a crew. And the outdoor gardeners, they have a crew. And then all of the volunteers that work. So there's quite a crew. Numbers anywhere from 50 to 70 people that are employees of the church work on them at one time or another. We also have audiovisual people, as an example. I mentioned that we did the recording this year for the new nativity.
Mm-hmm.
Those individuals, and without their help, it would be a much different look. We also have volunteers that, for gardening on some Saturdays, we have up to 500 volunteers here on a Saturday.
Wow.
For three Saturdays in a row. It's not unusual for a small group to come down, three to five individuals, or oftentimes we combine those groups and we have 25 to 75 at a time. So there are a lot of volunteers, a lot of people that are working to make this happen year-round.
Yeah, huge crew to pull this all together, and it's so appreciated, though, and so gorgeous and draws so many people. What do you think I think we've talked a little about this, but, you know, the draw for people. I know it's a tradition for so many folks to make this part of their family thing they do every year. But there's also something very special that sets Temple Square apart, and it's just being here around the gorgeous temple and on the grounds where the Spirit is.
Nancy, the thing that is most important to me is that I really believe the message of the gospel, and that is that Jesus is the Christ. And frankly, I really believe that he is my brother. And so when we have the opportunity to decorate and celebrate and commemorate his birth, it's not, to me, all about the lights, although that's a happy thing for a lot of people who come here. For me, it's the message that we share, and it's the message that I internalize, because it really is my belief that he's my brother and that his sacrifice has made it possible for me to return and live with him and my Father when that time comes. And to me, that's what it's all about. The glitz, the glamour, the prettiness. That's all part of it. And one thing that's nice about that, Nancy, is to watch the gleam in the little children's eyes when they come with their parents. I'll tell a little bit of a story that happened, I believe it was this year, that was reported to me by one of the gardeners. On the nativity scene that is on the big lawn just north of the tabernacle, with the music and the narration that comes, there is also a sequence of lights that turn on. And they illustrate the camels as the wise men are depicted in the narration, or they show the birth of the Christ, or the shepherds that witness the birth of the Christ. And as one of these little children were standing outside the fence watching these depictions and these lights come on, one of the lights turned on, and it just happened to catch this child in its beam as well. And this is a little bit humorous, and the child looked up, saw that he was in the light, and said, "Mom, Mom, I won! I won! What did I win?" So there are, you know, various kinds of things, very humorous or very serious, and all of that happens, and it's all a part of Christmas, and it's so nice just to be a part of it and bring the happiness and joy to people as they come and visit Temple Square, whether it's a child in the spotlight or whether it's the birth of our Savior. It's nice to be a part of it.
Right. And I think if the draw is the lights and the beauty, you come and you feel something, you know, and you go warm up in the visitor center and you walk up the ramp and you see the Christus and you talk to the missionaries. And it's a great opportunity for those of us who belong to the church, who are members, even who live here in the valley, to come and, you know, renew that and to bring friends. And for those who are just curious about what Temple Square is and about the lighting.
You know, you mentioned some things that stir in my own mind and memory. Some of the very important musical traditions that we have. The tabernacle itself housed the tabernacle choir. And the tabernacle choir and its music is such a part of the Christmas tradition. They have organ recitals here on Temple Square. And those organ recitals at this time of the year help us remember the reason that we do what we do. Also, the high school choirs are invited to Temple Square. And they will come and they will perform in the Joseph Smith Memorial Building and the church office building at various times during the day. And that's really quite a nice opportunity to come and have an additional part of the Christmas season by hearing these extra choirs that come in, or the bells on Temple Square and the symphony on Temple Square. All of those things help to contribute to the testimony of why we as a church do what we do at this Christmas time and celebrate the birth of our Savior.
Now, this is the only temple that is decorated at Christmas time. Is that right?
No, that's not. We have had various inquiries. I know that various temples throughout the world have various portions of their landscape lit. A few years ago, I have never been there to see it. I've never traveled to the country, but we had Akara, Africa, where there is a temple, that inquired about how we do the lighting of Temple Square. And we sent them some techniques, some information, some vendor information, things like that. I don't know if that particular one ever did put Christmas lights up for the celebration, but there are other Christmas displays for temples. Not as many as there are temples. Mm-hmm. They don't all do it, but there are others than Temple Square.
Oh, so maybe just here in the Salt Lake Valley and the many temples that we have, Salt Lake is the...
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's right.
And let's talk for a second about the, the spring and the flowers. And so that's also part of what you do.
You bet.
Yeah.
That's how I got hooked.
Is it? Yeah. And that's enough in itself right there to keep you busy.
Oh, it is. The 43-plus acres of what comprises the downtown area has a number of gardens. And I've had the opportunity to travel a little bit and see some of the gardens that are throughout the world, and I've studied those gardens. And I've heard it said that Temple Square has some world-class gardens. And as I had the opportunity to travel a little bit, and as if I looked around, I guess I'm a little bit prejudiced because I really believe that they are world-class gardens. Peter, in the gardening process, wanted to make sure that he emulated the creation that our Father created. And so in the way we arrange our plants, we keep that in mind. And we do that same thing. I mentioned the lights that we wrap on the trees. We like the trees to have the natural look. It's not real natural to have lights on a tree. But to emphasize the shape of those trees with the right. Christmas lights is the same thing. And we do that same thing with our gardens in the spring and in the fall. And we invite people to come and see the gorgeous display of tulips and perennials in the spring, and in the fall, those summer flowers before they are nipped by frost. We invite people to come and share that part of our season with us as well, because it is a beautiful time and really nice to be here.
Yeah. Well, we're talking today with Eldon Cannon, who is the manager of the grounds at Temple Square, and we've talked a lot about the Christmas lighting of the trees and of the square. Do you also take care of the actual decorated Christmas trees, maybe artificial trees that are in the buildings? Is that part of your responsibility as well?
That is. That's part of my responsibility. I have a young lady, Carolyn Bliss, who has a great crew that does the inside decoration of those artificial trees. We don't use cut living trees indoors for a number of reasons, but mostly because of the potential for fire.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do use artificial trees, and there are a number of buildings on campus that do have those artificial trees. Some trees as tall as 30 feet that are decorated in the Joseph Smith Memorial Building, as an example, in the lobby and the foyer. There's a very tall one in the stairwell of the church office building. And those are the bigger trees. There are smaller trees that are also in various places around campus. And those trees are lit from approximately October through November. So it takes about 2 months to get all of those done. And our internal floor group, interior decorators of our group, if you will allow, are the ones that do all of those inside trees with the help of some of the gardeners to actually set the tree up and put it in place and make sure it stays lit.
Right. Well, everything is always just top-notch and so beautiful. You do an amazing job.
Thank you, Nancy.
Tell us what your favorite part about your job is. What is it that you love about coming to work every day?
You know, one of the things that I got into horticulture for was I didn't want to have to do the same thing every day. As a result, I get to garden, I get to do Christmas, I get to go up in the mountains and cut the trees if I want to. And so the great variety of the types of things that I have the opportunity to do, I get to visit with you on the radio. So I don't get bored with what I do because right. There's such a variety to it. And I guess that would be one of the highlights, in my opinion, is the variety of what I do, enjoying the types of things that I went to school to learn.
Yeah, and living here where we have the seasons and there's so much change. And as the show is about creativity, how do you feel that you're creative in your job? Where does that come into play? Or do you feel that you are?
Well, you know, as you go from an individual that's designing 27 years ago and you're sitting down and putting everything on paper, right now, I allow those other gardeners that are out there to have their own creative juices flow. And so I ask my people to do their designing in the flower beds, as an example, or in our floral group. They have brilliant ideas of what they want to do with designs. And as a manager of those individuals, I try and get them what they need to design with and let their creative juices flow. And my job right now is one of oversight for those things which they do design. And if there are concerns that I have, they're very good at listening to what I have to say and taking those into account and making changes as necessary, eliminating things that might be a problem. We're looking for safety also. You can be as creative as you want, but if it's not going to be safe, we can't have that. So we're very conscious of the public, as an example, or the employees that have to put lights in trees, or if you're in a lift and trying to make sure that the tree is decorated properly in the stairwell of the church office building that's 35 feet tall, safety is an issue for us. And so we let those designers let their creative juices flow.
And
I have the
creative
opportunity.
Management.
There you go.
I remember a few years ago we came as a family and there was a really heavy snow probably the night before. And so the gates were closed. We couldn't walk in, you know, between Temple Square because of, I guess it was safety issues. Is that right?
That's right. And I think Temple Square has really only been closed once for that type of thing. But I was here, it was about 4 years ago that I remember, we had such heavy snow that the very large trees on Temple Square, which are so beautiful and add such shade, were so heavily laden with snow that we took the opportunity to close the square and physically got out there and shook some of the snow off some of those limbs so that we could remove the weight. Otherwise, we would have limbs dropping out of the trees and falling on people. And so we tried to preempt that problem by going out and physically taking the snow off those trees. But that's a rarity. That's the only time that I know of that it's been closed for that reason.
That's probably when it was. And I thought it was kind of neat in a way because everything really was. There was just a huge blanket of snow and the lights just trying to peek through. Mm. And it really was beautiful. And everyone was just standing outside looking in.
Hey, I think the only other time I think it was really closed is that when the tornado came through a number of years ago and it dropped a number of trees and limbs out of the trees in downtown Salt Lake. They did close the square at that point to do all of the cleanup after the tornado came through. But those are rare circumstances. You can count them on one hand when the square's been closed.
Right. Well, anything else you wanted to share with us today? Anything we didn't cover? Any stories? Any thoughts before we leave?
Oh, boy, you got me. There are so many things that we've talked about and so many good things that do occur. The only thing that really comes to mind, Nancy, is I really want to give a plug to those individuals, my workers and the volunteers who do this work. And I get all of the credit for what happens or doesn't happen out there on Temple Square as far as the grounds are concerned. But it's these individuals that work for me and that volunteer that are out there in the rain and the snow and the wind, and they get into those high lifts that are 40 to 65, in one case 95 feet high, that do all of the implementation of wrapping those lights. And we hope they don't put their lives in jeopardy, but it's really hard work.
Sure.
And as I've talked to those individuals who are on our crew that do that work, the thing that keeps them high about doing their job, you know, sure, it's a job. It's like anybody else's job. They do
right.
a job. But they really feel that there is the message that they are contributing to the spreading of the message of the gospel of Jesus Christ by allowing people to come and see what they have done. And they take a lot of good pride in doing a good job at that. So I just want to give them a plug for the hard work that they do to accomplish what they accomplish here on Temple Square for Christmas and the gardening as well.
Sure, yeah. Thank you all for all that you do. I think that those of us who come to visit now will look at the lights a little bit differently after today's discussion. So thank you so much, Eldon Cannon, for being here with us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you,
Merry
Nancy.
Merry Christmas to you.
Oh, happy holidays.
Thanks.